You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, the podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This week, Tea and Sympathetic Magic, Chapter 6. Neem had never stepped through a portal before. She recalled the first time she saw her father use his own, ducking out of the house for an appointment in town, or for one of his many trips to take the waters on the Isle of Bath. She recalled a strong breeze whipping up around the room, and a sense of dizzy pressure in her stomach as she got too close. She had expected that when she stepped through, she would experience a wash of cold energy, similar to the feel of ocean on bare feet, or the chilly sensation of walking through high security wards. Instead, portal magic came with a deep pulsing heat that rippled across her skin, tightening all her nerves and then releasing in a wave of discomfort that verged on pleasure. Neem felt strangely empty as she landed safely on the carpet in her father's library. "Well," said Juno, adjusting her hair and discreetly fanning herself with her hand, "I have a new theory as to why they don't allow ladies this particular freedom." It was an hour before dawn, the earliest possible time that a priest or priestess might be convinced to perform a wedding ceremony. And knowing the general crankiness of the clergy on the Isle of Memory, Neem would be surprised if any marriage, even one involving clandestine arrangements or a special license, was achieved before 9. At 5:10 on a Thursday morning, Neem expected her family home to be entirely quiet. With her father away, Mr. Seaborn generally used his wife's preoccupation with the season as an excuse to disappear to the Isle of Bath. Only her mother was in residence. Mrs. Galatea Seaborn was a late sleeper and late breakfaster, so even the lowest ranked maids would not be expected to climb out of bed for another hour or so. It was therefore greatly surprising when Neem and her guests stepped out of the library and into a veritable hive of activity. Every servant in the house, and many who were only hired from the village for special occasions, were already hard at work. Every light blazed. Orange blossom and myrtle fronds hung from each sconce and lintel. "I take it the elopement is no longer a secret," said Juno, when she saw the blatant nuptial flavour of the display. "It's not an elopement," muttered Mr. Thornbury, striding ahead to push open the doors of the grand dining room, the one that the family only dusted off for family parties. "It's a damned wedding." Neem gasped to see the tables decorated and laden with what could only be described as a splendid wedding breakfast. Fresh rolls and fruit, sugared almonds, jewel-coloured jellies matched with bright pastel junkets. There was a glazed ham set out on her great-grandmama's best silver platter, and a whole tongue so large it was presented across 2 china plates. There was a table laden with metal dishes full of hot savouries, eggs and salmon, charmed to stay piping hot until they were needed. Another table set out only with teacups ready to be poured. And the cake. In the centre of it all, the wedding cake, like an extravagant bouquet of roses sneering down at the daisy bed below them. Magic was everywhere. Neem's house did not smell familiar to her at all, with so much power emanating from the decorations, the tables, and most of all, that cake. It had so many tiers it could be hollowed out and used as a human-sized portal. Each layer was thick with white almond icing, silver flowers and sugared beads. That cake was clearly the hub of the power that had taken over her house. "It's more than one spell. Many layered over each other," said Mr. Thornbury. "Last time I witnessed a house this thick with power, it was necromancy, not sympathetic magic."
"Isn't sympathetic magic used for small things?" said Lady Liesel. "Like charms or hexes, nothing grand, nothing operatic.
That's usually the case, he agreed, looking distinctly worried. Lady Lovage must have hired a spellcaster, or an army of spellcasters, Juno said briskly. I refuse to believe that woman is capable of a project of this magnitude on her own. Her croquet charms were never all that impressive.
Or someone hired her, Cousin Metis said in a low voice, to get the Duke here in the first place.
Those are both viable possibilities, said Mr. Thornberry, stepping closer to examine the cake, his breath caught in his throat. Two figures stood atop the cake, sculpted in fondant. If you could use sympathetic magic to control a man's actions through a wax dolly or silk poppet, why not use one made out of sugar? The bridegroom was clearly Cousin Henry, wearing his favourite plum top hat. Every whisker of his red-gold beard was carefully carved in place. With such attention to detail, it was no wonder that the spell held such resonance beyond the cake itself. The bride was... Neame saw now why Thornbury had reacted as he did. It was clearly not Lady Lovage, nor any of her unmarried daughters, unfashionably blonde, every one of them. When you got close enough to see the detail beneath the crown of sugar violets, this bride had red hair. Neame exchanged a startled look with Cousin Metis, who displayed equal surprise. She turned to meet Mr. Thornberry's gaze and saw an expression of utter fury cross his face, before it was replaced by a chilly kind of politeness that was even worse.
You don't think, Neame began to say,
I think that if I am to rescue our eloped Duke before he is wed without his consent, I should do it as I always intended, said Mr. Thornberry, with a polite bow. Alone.
Neame could not blame him the least for suspecting her, given the evidence.
Henry Jupiter was about to be married from this house to a bride with all the markings of a seaborn. But oh, it still hurt to see that moment of distrust in his eyes.
This is awkward, Juno von Trask remarked, never one to let a silent moment go unchallenged.
Neame opened her mouth for a moment to deny that she or her cousin were the intended bride, but she could not in all conscience make such a claim without being sure, absolutely certain that her mamma, neither her mamma nor Aunt Hecate, was behind this plot. Both women were ruthless when it came to the pursuit of a good marriage for their daughters, even if they both fell down on efficacy. And powerful magic did run in the family after all. Mr. Thornberry turned his attention back to the cake. He picked up a silver salt shaker and threw a pinch of salt across the table, where they were incinerated in a flash by a protection spell so vicious it would be considered overkill on the Queen's jewels. He muttered, as if this was exactly what he had expected.
Nemosyne! Carolled a voice from within the house, the unmistakably shrill tones of Mrs. Galatea Seaborn, Neame's mamma. Jane told me you were here.
The lady of the house burst through the doors, garbed in a frightful gown so covered in embroidery, ruffles and tassels that it practically screamed, Mother of the Bride.
There you are!
Here I am, said Neame, bracing herself. There really was no proper etiquette for questioning one's mother about her involvement in a dastardly kidnapping and forced elopement.
What are you wearing?
Bellowed Galatea Seaborn, which was the pot calling the kettle full of boiling water. She seized Neame's arm and steered her out of the dining room.
Best dress for weddings, my dear. Don't you listen to a thing I tell you. Don't worry about your guests. I'll make sure someone takes care of them. You too, my dear, Mama added suddenly, grabbing Cousin Metis in her other hand on their way out of the room.
Metis was clearly stunned at being spoken to nicely by an aunt who had always treated her like pond scum. Like Neame, she allowed herself to be steered without protest. Something was terribly wrong, Neame finally acknowledged to herself, as they're escorted upstairs in search of best dresses, despite knowing that all their good things were hanging in wardrobes back at Storm North. Mama calling Cousin Metis my dear was the most suspicious behaviour that Neem had witnessed in years. Had her mother orchestrated this whole mess of an elopement to secure Henry as a husband for Neem? And if so, was it possible to climb out of a third-floor window? Neem had no chance to investigate her suspicions right this moment, because her mother had already led Neem directly to her bedchamber and disappeared on whatever nefarious deeds she was up to. It all happened so quickly, like when a string quartet launches into a familiar dance at double the speed. Metis was nowhere in sight, and there was a dress. Not just any dress, a best dress. It was a high-waisted tea gown in the classical silhouette with three layers of soft flowing fabric, perfectly in fashion and expertly crafted, except that the colour, a rich red, was more suited for a merry widow or young recently married lady than a maiden who had not yet given up on the marriage market. This might be her wedding dress. It was the most beautiful garment that Neem had ever owned. If she ended up murdering her mama, it wouldn't even show the stains. "Don't you look lovely!" exclaimed Mrs. Galatea Seaborn, as Neem emerged from her room wearing the beautiful new dress. "Such a flattering colour!" Neem had a childhood memory full of reminders that her mama hated to see her in any colour bolder than blush or cream. Even now she waited for the sting that inevitably followed the compliment. "You look so pretty, but..." Or, "Your complexion is so flattered when you stand out of direct sunlight." Or, "If only your hair behaved itself, you might get away with that style." "Lovely," Neem repeated, when she realised that there was to be no follow-up remark. She stepped closer to her mama, examining her guileless face. "Lovely," her mama repeated and smiled, as if there was nothing in the world she had ever meant more. "Perfect," she added, which was a blow too far. Neem leaned in, looking for some sign of magical influence or demonic possession. She knew to look for a jewel-like gleam in the irises, but what she saw instead was a floating, clouded sheen on the surface of her mama's eyes. The good news was that her mama was not the villain behind all this. The bad news? Mrs. Galatea Seaborn was clearly in the thrall of someone more powerful than she. "Mama," Neem said sharply, hoping that her voice would break through the cloud. "What's happening?" For a moment, her mama crumpled. "Oh, Mnemosyne," she whispered. "I think your Aunt Hecate has done something dreadful." "Metis," Neem thought worriedly. "Does that mean that Cousin Metis is the intended red-haired bride in this pantomime?" "What do you mean?" she entreated. Her mama shook her head and smiled far too brightly. "Come on, darling, mustn't be late. We have a wedding to attend." Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. There will be more Tea and Sympathetic Magic next week. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.